You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast. The Purple Project Podcast is on. Going behind the scenes of Kansas State Athletics, from the action on the gridiron to the octagon of doom, and much more. Plus making rounds about the happenings in the community. Triple P is loud and proud and ready to take charge in the Big 12 Conference. Podcasting to the Little Apple, Kansas City, and the world. It's the Purple Project Podcast. And now, here's your host, Eddie Greer III.
One is happening. Eddie Greer, live in Manhattan, Kansas, for another edition of the Purple Project Podcast Weekly Edition. This is episode 97, recorded tonight on this Wednesday, middle of the week, the last week of April. Can you believe it? Last week of April already of 2022, April 27th, 2022, here on this edition of the Purple Project Podcast, episode 97. We're counting down quickly to a huge milestone on this podcast. Before I bring on my co-host, Alex Aiden, of course, the Purple Project Podcast. If you're new to this podcast, welcome on board. If you've been listening for a while or for about a year now, appreciate your support. Obviously, the Purple Project Podcast is all about what's going on in the world of Kansas State athletics here in Manhattan, Kansas, a.k.a. the Little Apple. And you can find the Purple Project Podcast wherever you listen to your podcast, whether that's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Audioboom, iHeartRadio, Odyssey, and more. The Purple Project Podcast going into the month of May and definitely on pace to get to 100th episode in the middle of May. Can you believe it? I cannot, since I started this project. Now, not going to waste any more time. Bring on my co-host, as usual, for Triple PW Weekly. He doesn't live here in Manhattan, Kansas. He lives out west in San Diego, California. None other than Double A Alex Aiden, also a K-State alumni. Alex, what's happening out there?
Not too much, Eddie. I hope all is well with you. Been a couple weeks since we've jumped on chatted. We obviously took the week off last week with us both traveling. You went to Oklahoma City later in the week for your run. And I don't know if run is the right word, Eddie.
That is not the right word.
Because here's the thing. It's not like you're running it wasn't a marathon, was it?
It was a marathon.
It was a marathon. Okay. See, I didn't know if it was technically a marathon or not. So I didn't know whether it was a marathon or 5K or 10K. I didn't know. So marathon. Wow. I would literally find me dead on the side of the road. I know you run marathons, but I didn't know if it was an actual marathon for that one or not. So anyway, you're in Oklahoma City for the marathon late last week. And then at the for majority last week, I was in Las Vegas on a work trip, just did not really sync up. But we are here now, which is okay. It was a good week. There wasn't a ton that happened really in the K-State world. But a little did happen. There was obviously some recruiting news in the basketball side of things. They got a couple transfers coming in that I'm pretty high on. They've obviously got a couple others that they're chasing that seem like they could be really good additions. There's actually a five-star recruit that's considering K-State for 2022. There's another five-star recruit considering for 2023. So they've clearly got some movement there on the basketball side of things. So we'll see what happens in the coming weeks with them. Outside of that, the Bat-Cats, they got that series win against Texas. We didn't know what was going to happen. We were talking last. They got that series win, and they also were able to take care of a majority of their non-con there, kind of in between that and then their series against Oklahoma that they've got coming up this weekend. So I know they did drop that matchup against Nebraska the other day, but they took 2-3. From UC Irvine, which was a top 20 school in the preseason, top 25, and a school that has a much better record than K-State. So that was a good good win, serious win for them. And then also to get the win over Omaha was big for them too. Beating another team above 500. So they were doing work, and we are here ready to talk, and also NFL draft tomorrow, Eddie. So that's obviously an exciting time. Your team has 9 picks in the draft. My team has 12 picks in the draft. So I think that you and I both will be very engaged in the draft. Safe to say, although I don't think the Chiefs will end up taking 12 picks. I think they will end up taking closer to 9 picks when all said and done, because I think they'll be trading around. They don't need 12 players. They just don't. They don't have that many holes to fill. But I do. They obviously will be active. And your Falcons, as we were talking about right before we jumped on here, kind of a wild card in the first round. Don't know what they're gonna do. So my future a little more predictable because they kind of.
Of course they are.
But still, I think there's question marks there. And then look, we got Case Daters that we got some question marks. Who's going to go? Will Skyler get drafted? Are there any other possible possibilities? That's another thing that we've got to look at. Was it last year, Eddie, or the year before, Case State had the really long streak draft snap?
I think it was the year before last year.
It was a year before last year. Was that it? Yeah, they had that. Yes, because Wyatt Hubert went last year. Yeah, Wyatt Hubert went like the fourth round or something.
I thought it was seventh round. The last round.
Maybe you're right. Maybe I'm pumping Wyatt Hubert up more than he deserved. Point being, he got drafted. You were correct. He got drafted with the Bengals. I remember that. So I was here right. It's a one. Will it go to two? I don't know. But. We'll see, so lots of stuff to dive into.
Yep, that is correct. And you, speaking of NFL draft, at Vegas tomorrow night, you were Joe over there in the beginning of the week, last week over there. How was Vegas out there?
Sin City is up to its same old tricks. No, look, it was good. It was good. My company, we were actually putting on a government identity fraud summit. So riveting, riveting stuff. I know you all would have done anything to get into the room and for a day and a half and just hear all of these high level decision makers talk about government identity fraud. I mean, it is really riveting stuff. I actually do, I'm Mr. PR over there, so it was good, that was good. You know, we had the conference, I think it went really well. We had a lot of good speakers, a lot of good attendees, got to do a lot of networking out there, and went to some good receptions, Eddie. Went to some good receptions, stayed at Mandalay Bay. Out there in Vegas, and also enjoyed some time after as well. Look, it's Vegas, man. No one relaxes, Eddie. Like, even when you're done working, someone wants to take you. Oh no, hey Alex, come over here. Let me buy you this. Buy you some drink for over here. Let me go and bring you over there. Oh, I'll do a little something over here. She's like, oh my gosh, it's never gonna end. The only time I spent in my room was sleeping, and I think I slept 5 hours every night I was there. It was just go. But it's okay. I drank, Eddie, probably one of the best white wines I think I've ever had when I was there. I drank a 10-year-old rye. It was a 10-year-old rye whiskey that my boss got me and insisted that I try it. And it was delicious. It was delicious. I will be honest, I'm a whiskey guy and a wine guy, but I'm a whiskey guy. And so that 10-year-old rye batch whiskey that he got me was delicious and a little dangerous, to be 100% honest. But hey, nothing better than your boss is trying to get you drunk on a work trip. So,
oh boy,
it is what it is. You got to pace yourself. You're in Vegas, everybody wants to have a good time. But no, it was good. It was good. I'm I'm glad it was last week and not this week, because I cannot imagine what Las Vegas is like at this moment. So if I was there right now, man, the NFL draft going on with that many people in Vegas. There's already a ton of people in Vegas. And you throw all that on top of it. Oh, my gosh. So many people. So it was good. I enjoyed it. Thank you for asking. And I hope that Oklahoma City was well for you, too. I was really cool because you were able to go out and do the marathon. And you mentioned it, I think, on social media that from where you were just a couple weeks ago to being able to run a marathon, just a complete 180.
Last weekend I was down in Oklahoma City. The Midwest in general last weekend was pretty windy, still chilly for whatever reason. It's supposed to be spring. We're coming up on the end of April, almost into May, and we're still getting some winter-ish weather conditions of some sort for whatever reason, because it's the Midwest and because it's Kansas or Oklahoma. Got the whole Oklahoma experience, tornado warnings in the metro area.
Oh, I saw that. I did see that. Yeah, I saw you tweet that.
Yep, that was fun. That was fun a little bit there. Heard sirens go off every 5 minutes. That was pretty fun to bear witness to that. So, but all in all, I mean, got out of it okay. Obviously, the only threatening thing was an absolute downpour, which turned out to be some flooding around the area as well. So, yeah, and which pushed back the Oklahoma Memorial Marathon start back an hour. So it was supposed to start at 6:30 Sunday, last Sunday, but it got the start got pushed back because of the whole weather situation. We didn't want to folks who were in charge didn't want any part of the wet rain. Now it's still sprinkling and overcast at the start, but other than that, more importantly though, it was still somewhat windy, but not windy as it has been over the last several days.
And before you continue, this is the most Oklahoma-like weather I've ever heard. Like, it's just so Oklahoma. Like, as someone who lived in North Texas for over 3 years, just 10 miles from the Red River, knowing what Oklahoma weather was like, oh my gosh, you're describing it to a T. So continue. None of the surprises with Oklahoma, but continue.
Yep. So, race day, everything gets pushed back, and originally, the marathoners was going to start first, at least a half hour before the half marathoners. But instead, this was a bunch start with the marathoners. Okay, so I better backtrack. So the full marathoners, which I was in, the group I was in, huge group, obviously, 26.2 miles, right? And the half marathoners are running half that distance, 13.1, which I've run plenty of those. So I had to change my plan a little bit because I did not want to go out super fast. So that kind of changed the plan a little bit, and I ended up going a little bit too conservative for my liking. But all in all, still at the end of the run, though, I was able to pass a few more folks, which is always nice because that means you are pretty much hitting full steam ahead, strong, fast, while everyone else is kind of walking and struggling a little bit.
I can see you, Eddie. I can see you passing them, and there's just throwing up the deuces as you go by.
Yeah, but I also got passed as well towards the end as well. I saw probably my funniest moment was kind of this big lineman dude kind of go zoom by me. It was after mile 22 or something like that. I see he passed me to my right. I'm like, oh my goodness, man, this guy's moving. And then I think this elderly lady was running on a relay team or something, because they do have now. The 5K was the day before, was on Saturday, and the 10K half marathon and marathon were all on Sunday. So Yeah, I think this LA lady came with her with her wacky running form comes by me as well towards the end as well. I almost actually catch up back to her towards the end, but I think she was on a marathon relay.
Is that what you're trying to tell yourself? Are you trying to, like, oh, she had to be. Like, there's no way.
It's like, there's no way. Because there's no way, because you don't see these people. You don't see these people you're running with until the very end. Like, it's like you run with this a few group of people, guys or gals, with you through most of the run. And then, depending on your fitness, either you go by them or they go ahead of you quite a bit. You don't see them ever again. So I was with, I was in some fierce yo-yo action, back and forth, trying to hang with a couple of guys for a few miles, then go by them. And then here comes another group of guys, and halfway point of the race, they catch up, and I hang with them. We stick together for a few miles here and there, and then they go on about their business. They go ahead of me. So I'm kind of just chilling, and then I catch up to a few other folks that I haven't seen all day. So it's kind of one of those things where it's definitely why folks say that marathon's the hardest thing you ever done, because not in tip-top, at least good enough shape, you ain't going to make it. So that was my sixth completed marathon. I'm 6 for 6 in these things.
Unbelievable.
So you would ask me a long time ago to run a full marathon. I would have told you, hell no. I won't even get to a half, to be honest with you. But to complete that many marathons and also do a whole lot of half marathons. And speaking of that, and shout out to the Bill Snyder Half Marathon coming up next month as well. A big month, actually. Got the 100th episode of the Pro Project Podcast. Then the week after that's going to be the Bill Snyder Half Marathon here in town. My favorite half marathon. That's where it all started. The Bill Snyder Half Marathon. Yeah. So
not the Bill Snyder Run. It wasn't called the Bill Snyder Run.
Nope. It was not called that. It's just called the Bill Snyder 5K Half Marathon. Yep, that's what it's called. Yep, I actually have.
Well, that is a very popular half marathon. Look, as someone who's never ran a half marathon in my life, nor ever probably will run a half marathon in my life, I've heard of the Bill Snyder Half Marathon, and I know some of the people that go out and run that. That's a great event for the community out there in the half.
Yep, definitely. Manhattan, definitely one of those small towns that you can get yourself involved in. Definitely would put the running community up there, probably top 10 right up there with some of the good other ones there. Pretty fortunate to know a lot of folks through the Manhattan Running Company. Shout out, shameless plug here on the Pearl Project Podcast. Who is looking for a sponsor? Also, while I'm on that subject, shout out Briggs Auto Group for a job well done on my new ride I just gotten today. So I put a sneak peek on the old Instagram page, on my Instagram page. So that's all I'm going to leak out right now. Yeah, a little sneak peek for y'all, for those of you who follow me on the Instagram page there. So definitely, oh, and I should plug that in as well, Spaghetti Eddie is the handle on that. So yep. So it's been a pretty busy day. A busy day at work, and then finally coming back over to running over to Briggs, which I am not that far from Briggs. It's like I can walk there pretty much. So I live on Stack Hill, wow. And right there is the new Genesis, and which I don't have a membership and I don't need it. And then
thank you for that.
At least for now. And then, of course, right down the big old hill is Briggs Auto Group with, of course, the customer service, Nissan, GMC, Buick, all those, almost half the manufacturers over there. So, yeah, shout out to Briggs. They did it right. It was not.
Fun fact, Eddie, I bought my first car for Briggs.
Nice.
I did. Well, okay, it was my first car. That's not true. So when I went to K-State, and not that anyone cares about the story, but I'll tell it anyway, because I, you know, is what it is. I like to tell stories. So when I went to K-State, I had my car, which was a car, you know, people, how people have it, you know, parents hand in to paint out a car when they get a new, you know, they get a new car or something like that. I ended up having a 2000. Oh my gosh, I can't remember what year it was, but it was a Kia Optima. So anyway, I had that, it was handed down to me. I drove it in like the latter half of high school. Actually, no, that's not true. I technically did buy a car that lasted me 6 months and then crapped out. Then I got the car handed down from my parents. And then I had it for majority of my time there at K-State, but my senior year of college, my dad was like, "Yeah, we're taking that car back." I'm like, "Why? But they wanted it back. And they're like, "No, you need to go get your own car." And I was like, "Yeah, I'm kidding." So I was like, "Well, whatever. And welcome to adult life, I suppose." So I went to Briggs, and got a 2013 Kia Optima. That was the first real car purchase that I made. And yes, took it to Briggs Eddie to get for any servicing that it needed. I don't know how we really got on, you know, this on the topic of Briggs, but yeah. So fun fact: I bought my first car from Briggs, which I no longer have. I actually traded it in this last summer for a brand new 2022 Kia K5. Oh,
I've seen those around here. Woo!
Yes, and I got the GT version too. So it's cool. It's actually got the turbo engine. Oh my gosh, I love it. Oh, I couldn't go back. Now, I spoiled myself. I usually don't spoil myself, but I decided to do it this last summer. So that's my new car. But yes, Briggs. Look, if you're good people, good cars, buy my first car there. You know, can't go wrong. But look, that's Manhattan, man. Manhattan. Good people, good companies, you know. That's what it is, man. That's what it's about. That's what it's about in that community.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Oh, man. Can you tell? We haven't done a show in 2 weeks. Eddie Greer, Alex Hayden, the Purple Project Podcast, episode 97, continues. Getting caught up there. What's been going on in our lives last week and a half or so? And now, transitioning from Riggs to, of course, Alex mentioned...
There's no transition from
Riggs. making the weird transition from Briggs Auto, shout out Briggs, to K-State Baseball. Alex already mentioned it. K-State over the weekend, taking 2-3 from UC Irvine. And last night, in the old familiar Big 12 matchup, between K-State and Nebraska, K-State loses to the Big 10 opponent, Nebraska, 8-6. K-State, inside the box score here for you guys. K-State scored 6 runs on 5 hit on 5. Yeah, 6 runs on 5, 8 hits and 1 error, and they left 6 on base. The Cornhuskers, the winning team, unfortunately, scored 8 runs on 8 hits, committed no errors, and stranded 11 base runners there. The Cats issued 8 walks. That's a recipe for disaster, whether it's college or Major League Baseball. hit 4 batters. Woof, as 5 of the Cornhuskers' runs scored on 3 passes. Yeah, again, you cannot... That's not winning baseball right there, walking batters, and then that's a recipe for disaster, especially in the college game. 10 of the 12 free base runners for K-State pitchers allowed occurred in the first 5 innings of this game last night. Of course, when this podcast comes up, this episode comes out Friday night, K-State will be playing Oklahoma in a weekend series coming up. Heinrich, again, he's been on a tear as of late. He hit his 8th home run last night. 4th home run in his last 5 games. Heinrich's home run was K-State's only extra base hit. Are you kidding me? Five Wildcat pitchers combined last night for a dozen strikeouts. Nebraska stole seven bases in the contest last night. And how about this as a stat? Six of them coming in the first inning. Their K-State hit 333 with runners in scoring position, but only 3 for 12 last night. They were batted 250 with two outs there. The Huskers on the other end were 3 for 10 with two outs, and they were only 3 of 13 with runners in scoring position there as well. Last night's meeting between K-State and Nebraska on the diamond was the 290th meeting all time between these former conference foes in Nebraska. Yeah, of course, they lead the series 174 to 116. This is dating back all the way back to 1898. K-State is now 43-91 on the road against the Cornhuskers. That's that to me when I looked at that. That is a mind blower right there. The Wildcats have homered now in five straight games. That includes the Heinrich home run last night. K-State is now 5-11. And how have we talked about this for the last several weeks on this podcast? The road war woes for K-State. K-State can only clean those up. I talked about this in the dailies as well over recent weeks. K-State will be in a different position, but instead, they're kind of floating on trending over 500 baseball. 5-11 in true road games, excuse me. 5-14 in all away games away from Twinton this season. The Wildcats.
That's the deal.
The Cats have committed one error in seven straight games. One error in the last seven straight. That's a bad stat. You don't want to be at
par. Also not ideal.
No, it's not. And they have committed an error in 16 of the last 17. Damn! K-State.
It's really not ideal.
K-State and Nebraska, they end up winning the series. K-State had a chance last night to win this series. They didn't need to do it. They didn't do it there. And basically, K-State and Nebraska take care of their own home field there last night in the ball game. So, all of that, Alex. Oh, by the way, I should say, Tyrell got the loss for K-State. He's now 2-2. C.J. Hood got the decision, 2-0. And Braxton Bragg got save number 5 for the Cornhuskers, who are now 16-23. I repeat, 16-23. And K-State falls to 21-19 after all that, Alex. What are your thoughts moving forward? Obviously, Oklahoma, they got to go to Norman this weekend to play Oklahoma there. Kind of what are your thoughts so far? Obviously, K-State going back to UC Irvine. They have won. They're 500. They're 2 of the last 4 games. So what does K-State need to do going Norman to get themselves a conference series win over the week this weekend?
Well, Eddie, I think they need to learn to win road games. I think this needs to be a good starting spot. You're going up against an Oklahoma squad that has won. Golly, what's their record at home? They are 14-4 at home this year. So they have been a good team at home. Back Oklahoma, they've won 25 games. They're 25-14. On the year and 7-5 Big 12 play, so they are a solid club. But I think the thing, Eddie, with the team is they are playing better baseball. They're playing better than they were. They're closing out some games. They're winning some tough ones. Like I said, UC Irvine, that was a tough series. K-State did get blown out in one of those games, but they did find a way to win the other two. And then they found a way to get the game there against Omaha at home, 11-3. And they went on the road, and they did beat Wichita State. Granted, Wichita State's not very good this year. I took a look before the podcast, and I think they're 13-28 on the year. So they're not lighting it up. But, hey, it's still a respectable baseball program. So, you know, like I mentioned, they had that after that series win against Texas. They had that non-con, that like little string of non-con where they had that game at Wichita State. They had the game against Omaha. Then they had the three against UC Irvine, and they had the Nebraska game. When you add those games up, they went, what was it, 1-2-3, 3-0, 3-1, 4-1, 4-2. So, you know, 4-2, and that's a little string coming off of 2-1 against the preseason number one team in the country, Texas, who was ranked number 7 when you played them. And you took 2-3 against them, which puts you at 6-3 in your last 9 against some good quality opponents. So I think K-State's, they're playing better at it, and they're doing, you know, they're doing some good things, and they're about to hit that part of the schedule where they're going to have Oklahoma, KU, Baylor, and West Virginia to end it out. They only have in there 2 more non-con games. They have Wichita State sandwiched in at home, which is a game that they should win. And then they got a trip to Virginia Tech for one before they go play West Virginia, and the rest are Big 12 games. So you've got a series against the they played TCU, Oklahoma State, Texas, Texas Tech, right? Those are your top 4 teams in the conference. So now you've got a series against the 4. The 3, I should say, because Iowa State doesn't have baseball there. The 3 bottom teams. You got them. So while K-State's been making ground, Eddie, they gotta go. Like, it's time to go. It's time for the train to leave the station. Like, no more, we won 2-3 here. We won 1-3 there, you know, so we break even. Like, no. Just to give a quick summation of the Big 12 baseball landscape right now. K-State's currently sitting in 9th in the Big 12 standings. They are 3-9 in conference play. They're 1 game ahead of KU, who's 2-10. And they are 1 game behind Baylor, who is 4-11. And then you have West Virginia and Oklahoma, who have winning records. They're both 7-5 in conference play. As I mentioned, Oklahoma, they're 25-14. West Virginia's 24-15. So those are schools, while they might be in like the bottom half, like they're still good baseball teams. Like they're good teams this year. Big 12's loaded. I think we talked about that before. I'll preface it again. Loaded conference, man.
Yeah.
Loaded conference this year. But look, K-State's in a bad spot. I mean, I don't know how else to say it. They're in a bad spot. There's nothing good about the spot they're in right now, Eddie. And what they have to do is they have to find ways to win games. What's ironic, Eddie, and this is the kicker, and this is what got me last year, gets me again this year. They are 3rd in the Big 12 in home wins. 3rd. I mean, they're literally 3rd in the Big 12 in home wins. They're 16-5, as you mentioned, at home. And the only teams that have more wins at home are Texas and Texas Tech. That's it. But when you look at that road record, it is the worst in the Big 12. They're fucking, if you include their neutral games, they have the worst record away from home of any team in the Big 12. And what did we talk about last year? It's the exact same story.
Same thing.
Dominant at home. Dominant at Toyn Family Stadium. Just horrible away from it. And it's been the same thing. And it's a little concerning to me. It really is to see that trend continue for them. Look, I'm not saying, hey, you know, it's time to put PGUs in the hot seat or anything like that. But I'm saying that 2 years in a row, seeing that trend when we were expecting a little bit more from them, is just disappointing. I think it's probably the best way to put it. But there's still time for them to turn around. Once again, they got 3 series against 3 schools. What really stinks, Eddie, is the fact that they got 4 series, not 3. They got 4 series. I lied right now. It's just a dead 3. They have 4, but the 2 that they have on the road are Oklahoma State, West Virginia. Of course, those are the 2 that have on the road, and those are the 2 best of the 4. So you're going to have to go on the road. You're going to have to go win a series against Oklahoma. It was 25-14. You're going to have to go on the road at one point and beat West Virginia, who's 24-15. Both have winning records in the Big 12. So when you look at that and think, oh, their final 2 home series are against Baylor and KU. Yeah, Baylor is 4-11 in conference play, and KU is 2-10. Yeah, K-State. Let me start here, Eddie. You got to go 5-1 in those 2 series at home. You got to go 5-1 at the worst, if not sweep them both. You have got to dominate your home field. You've got to win those games and put yourself in a somewhat realistic position. If you can do that, then maybe you got a shot. If you can go and you can win the series, you know, take 2 or 3 against Oklahoma, take 2 or 3 against West Virginia. And once again, we're talking about K-State. If they want to make any sort of push at postseason play, which I don't know how realistic that really even is for them at the moment, but if you do want to look at it from that angle, you've got to almost sweep those 2 series at home and then win those 2 series on the road. And then you got to get the knock-ons. You know, that's just kind of where they're at. So they've been playing better baseball, and that's awesome. That's great. But they're still 9th in the Big 12. And they're still only one game. They're still only one game away from last. So they got to step it up. They got to turn it up a gear. And you mentioned it. It starts Oklahoma. They've been playing better baseball. That's encouraging. But they continue to make too many mistakes. You just mentioned it. Too many errors. And it's not just errors. Just too many mental errors for the pitchers, too. I can't tell you how many times I've seen pitchers make mistakes, walking batters in. You know, just, you know, K-State just giving the opponents opportunities to score. You can't give opponents extra outs, man. With the amount of walks they've been given up, the amount of errors that they have, the amount of hit batters, all that stuff adds up, and it's almost like K-State sometimes is the offense for the opposing team. I can't tell you how many times it's felt like that this year. So while they've been playing better baseball, they're still making too many mistakes, and you've got to cut down on those mistakes. If you want any realistic chance at having any sort of postseason play or being able to make a run in that Big 12 tournament. So Oklahoma series is huge because you got to go into Norman. You got to find a way to win series. And I think that's going to be really difficult for them. But if you can go to Oklahoma and you can win 2 or 3, you can come out of that with that momentum. Then look, you come home and you play Wichita State and KU and you potentially, rattle off 4 in a row there. And you can add some momentum because, as we mentioned, 6-3 in the last 9. You go to OU, you went 2-3. You come home, you went 4 in a row. You've got a nice run going. And then you got Baylor. You got Baylor for 3 after KU. So you really have got a chance. If you win a series against Oklahoma, you're coming home for 7 games in a row that you're going to probably be the favorite. So, once again, you can really get some momentum before you've got to go on the road and play Virginia Tech and West Virginia. So, huge series, Eddie. Huge series for them. And it really could be make or break series for their season. So, they got to go in, they got to play good, clean baseball and try to win that series.
Yeah, that's kind of the main thing for the Bat-Cats going in. Of course, Oklahoma series in Norman starts on Friday at 6:30, and it looks like all the games will be, well, at least on the radio side, will be on KMAN, the station here in Manhattan, Kansas. For those of you who don't live in Manhattan, Kansas, or in the state of Kansas in general, 1350 AM, and of course on the FM side, it's 93.3. Oklahoma, 6:30 start Friday. And then game 2 set for 2 o'clock on Saturday. And then, of course, the finale, same time. And that is going to be May 1st at 2 p.m. as well. And then, of course, Wichita State comes to town next Tuesday. And then you got the Dillon Sunflower Showdown next weekend. I don't want to go too far in advance there. You got 3 at home against KU. So, yeah. You're going to have to find a way to hopefully get at least 1 in Oklahoma, if not 2. Oklahoma is sitting 5th in the conference right now, 7-5 overall, 25-14. K-State, already mentioned their record already. And, of course, here, real quickly, Dom Johnson last night went 1-for-5, drove in a run. Josh Nikoloff also 1-for-5. Drove in a run as well. Dylan Phillips went 1-for-3, scored a run and drove in 1. Jeff Heinrich with a homer last night. That was his only hit of the game last night. It was a bomb, and he drove it 2 with that home run. Again, he's homered last 4 of his last 5 games there. So K-State looking for some more consistency here as they get prepared to take on the Oklahoma Sooners, Alex Aiden, Eddie Greer. This is the Purple Project Podcast, weekly edition, episode 97. Transitioning on, I've been doing a mini-series this past month. It will conclude this weekend about my favorite moments from the men's basketball and women's basketball seasons this past year, 2021-22 style. And I will reveal my favorite moment, number one, from each side this weekend. So stay tuned for that. If you have not been paying attention to any of that, go back through the archives. It's up now wherever you listen to podcasts. Along with, I did not post a daily today, and I was super busy, so I did not have a chance to do that. But there's other content out there on the page. So definitely, if you're not a subscriber to the Purple Project Podcast, and if you're a K-State fan, you're missing out. Definitely go check that out. I'll be posting dailies for the rest of the week, hopefully, including this weekend, of my favorite moments, which now leads into finally getting Alex. We'll start with the easiest first. Alex, obviously, I'm not going to reveal my number one moment until Sunday. So that's going to leave you. So what, there's plenty of moments to go around, because this K-State women's team, as we talked about on this podcast this year, exceeded expectations. Yeah. What was your favorite moment from this past year for Jeff Minnie's team?
Yes, well, I have a moment. First off, though, before I kind of get this off my chest about baseball team, so I...
Okay.
Sorry. I do a favorite moment. I don't want it to sound like I'm, like, hating on the baseball team, okay? Like, I can see how some people can be like, oh my gosh, what a downer. Like, he's so down on the baseball team. Why is he just like, oh, they suck. No. Not what I'm saying. BU's done a good job, in my opinion. Coming into this season, K-State set an expectation last year with the way they performed. I've actually thought they overperformed a little bit last year on the diamond. And I really think they set an expectation of kind of how things were going to be. And so... you know, with the expectations that the baseball team have coming into the year, and, you know, that raised the expectations that I have, and it raised the expectations of other people. So to see them kind of regress a little bit has been what's disappointing. Not hating on team, still love the team. I just thought about that, and I was like, yeah, I'm not like, I'm just like, every week, like, oh, he hates the team. No. Look, they're also playing a much more difficult schedule this year. Well, so that's also a big factor in it, too. But either way, they still need to step it up and try not to get no hit by KU. Once again, that probably sounds like a jerk comment. I swear, I'm just making a joke. That was ridiculous. You should never get no hit by KU.
Yeah, anyway, please don't do it, because I'll go.
No hit by KU. They're the worst team in the conference. They're the worst team in the conference.
Because I will go on a rant. Because I will go on a rant if they do that again.
Oh my gosh, they're good. By the way, I'll tell you what, that basketball team, they're sure chirping a lot for a team. They act like they don't care about KU. They don't act like they don't care about K-State, but that basketball team, ever since they won the national championship, they are chirping their little mouths about K-State a lot. And I don't understand. Like, I don't get it, but whatever. So anyway, favorite women's team memory moment. For me, it's easy, Eddie. For me, it really is easy. I think what happened in Breland, that one, I think it was a Sunday afternoon. Might have been a Saturday afternoon, but I think it was a Sunday afternoon. When they welcomed the Oklahoma Sooners this year. They might have been ranked in the top 10. If not top 10, it was top 15.
I thought it was top 15 for sure.
They might have been like 12 or something like that. They might have been just outside the top 10. They were definitely within the top 15, though. Coming in Manhattan. And what do you know? Aoka Lee scores more points than Oklahoma scores in the entire game, scoring 61 in K-State. Well, maybe she scored the same amount. I think the final score about 98-61. Either way, you beat a top 15 team by over 35 points at home. Aoka Lee sets the record for points in a single game, like, or something. I can't remember the exact, it was the most points ever scored in a game. by a college women's basketball player. So that was amazing. That was an amazing moment because, first off, Eddie, when I turned on SportsCenter that night, I see on Scott Van Pelt, K-State and Ayoka Lee leading the show. I mean, how often does that happen? Are you kidding? Like, K-State women's basketball leading SportsCenter, leading SVP, Ayoka Lee, you know, listening to her interview after the game, like, that never happens. So first off, me, Mr. PR, of course, I'm like, what great PR. Oh, that was great PR. What great exposure. But it was. Look, it was a great moment for Ayoka to be able to get that moment, because how often have we talked about it? I mean, that she doesn't get the recognition that she deserves. That's really how I feel. I think she may be the best basketball player, women's college basketball player. Doesn't get the recognition she deserves, in my opinion. And so for her to have that moment, I thought that was really special. That's why I wanted K-State to win, to at least make a little push in the NCAA tournament, because I wanted her to get that moment. That honestly was more important than anything to me. I knew that they couldn't get out the first weekend, likely, but I wanted her to at least win, get a game so she could get that moment, and, well, the fans could get that moment, and we did get that, so that was nice. But but that was a really cool moment, and it wasn't just the fact that she blew up and went off. It was the fact that she did it against a top 15 team, and K-State beat them by, like, over 35 points. It was just such a dominating win. Now, you can look at it on the flip side, Eddie, and I think that win might have kind of messed their season up a little bit after the Oklahoma game. They really struggled after that Oklahoma game, and teams started devoting resources to Ayoka Lee and doing things to double-team her and take her out of games, and K-State was struggling to adjust, and so it kind of threw them off. But it was, in that moment, though, in that particular moment, it was great to see for her, for the basketball program, for Chip Nitty, for all of them. And one I won't forget. I will say, Eddie, I will say, if K-State did beat Iowa State in Bramlage, if Iowa State didn't bank a three at the buzzer, that probably would have not picked. That one probably would have been my pick if K-State pulled it off. But they couldn't quite pull it off, so it is what it is. But definitely Oklahoma, and they were bullied for me.
All right, yeah. I kind of said that as well. Talked about the Iowa State name as well. So yeah, that's been well documented here on the Pro Project Podcast, according to the women. So yeah, just to reiterate Alex's moment there, K-State Ayoka Lee putting down 61 sets the new NCAA women's single game scoring record. She broke that record, which stood all the way since 1987, the last time that happened. So, that was 3 years after I was born. So that's probably telling you a little too much of how old I am. But so Ayoka Lee taking K-State women's team to new heights. And of course, I've mentioned them a little bit in last week's dailies about recruiting as well. They are going to be loaded this upcoming fall, that is for sure. Now, switching over to the other side of the coin, to the men. Obviously, same thing. I'm not going to reveal mine until Saturday. Recording of the Pro Project Podcast Daily Edition. So stay tuned for that. But meanwhile, you're going to hear what Alex has to say. So Alex, so you said before I hit the record button that this was a little bit more difficult decision for you to make.
Yeah, this one is more difficult. I'll say this. This one would have been easy if K-State could have closed if they could have finished off an 18-point lead they had at halftime against another in-state school. They weren't able to do that, as we know. By the way, with that K-State-KU game in Bramlage, while that would have been my top one, obviously, if K-State pulled it off, it is now possibly my least favorite game of the season because of the way it ended. And because KU won't shut up about it. I get it. Good win. But, like, they were talking with Jalen. I'm sure a lot of people have heard this, but they were talking with Jalen Wilson after they won the national championship. And, you know, they asked Jalen Wenya, what's your favorite moment from the season? And that was it. It was that game. It was that game where they came into Bramlage and were down by a ton and won. And Jalen Wilson was very open and honest in the podcast that he was on, saying, look, you know, little brother thought they had it. Little brother thought they had the game won. And, we got to put little brother back in their place. And we enjoyed it. And I just thought, oh my gosh, this is really annoying to listen to. And look, Mitch Lightfoot has also come out and referenced the game. And he has also made it, had taken some shots and some jabs and some stabs at K-State, which gets back to what I said earlier, Eddie. I don't understand why the KU basketball players are taking so many jabs at K-State right now. It doesn't make any sense to me. Like, what, okay, they finished ninth. Like, are you proud? Like, congrats that you almost lost to ninth place K-State. Like, I don't know what you're saying. Like, I don't get why you're so excited about that. Whatever. But here's what it means, Eddie. It means that KU really does care about K-State as much as they try to act like they don't. They do. Don't act like you don't, KU. Listen to you guys. Yes, KU. You live rent-free in our heads, but we live rent-free in your heads, too. Don't act like it. It's a two-way street. Anyway, aside from that game, there were a lot of games that, believe it or not, even though the basketball team went, 14-17 and 6-12 and Big 12 play, you wouldn't think that there'd be a lot of moments. There actually were a handful of moments. They beat Texas Tech, as we know, at home. That was a really good win. You get a double-digit win against one of the best teams in the Big 12, a team that ended up going to the Sweet 16 and just about went to the Elite Eight. Just about knocked up Duke. Probably should have knocked up Duke, to be 100% honest. And they also got a really nice win on the road against Texas. A 1-point win. Man, that was a crazy game going back and forth. Mark Scar had the ball there, chance to win it. Missed it. K-State threw the horns down there in the Irwin Center. That was beautiful. That was beautiful, beautiful. And so, man, I mean, those two games really could be, and I think you could make an argument for Texas. I know you do, but I really think for me, I really, really, really think that it is Wichita State. I really do.
Okay.
And the reason it's Wichita State for me is because of a lot of the things that we talked about on this podcast prior to the basketball season. We talked about, man, you know, K-State, Wichita State, they've been trying to schedule this season. Well, I should say they've been trying. There's been talk about scheduling this for 10 years. You know, I mean, this has been, like, a wildly discussed thing. You know, back when Wichita State was really good, back when K-State was really good, they were talking about, no, our team will be your team. No, your team will be our team. Oh, you're too scared to play us. Well, why would we play you? Like, all this back and forth that, you know, Wichita State's AD taking shots at K-State, and then K-State saying, oh, we'll schedule you, but then Wichita State saying, nah, we actually don't want to schedule you. Like, that went on for 10 years. And finally, they got it on the books. A series for K-State and Wichita State to play, and it was packed. First off, it sucks that it was on a Sunday afternoon. Don't ever schedule a K-State and Wichita State game on a Sunday afternoon, ever again. By the way, K-State, stop schedule.
Yeah, I was a mistake.
Sunday games, period. Like, I want to watch the NFL on a Sunday. I don't want to watch college basketball. Like, no offense to college basketball, but that's not what I want to do on a Sunday. But whatever. I digress. So, back to the game. Wichita State game, it should never be on a Sunday afternoon. Because I was having to flip back and forth between the Chiefs game and K-State, Wichita State, whatever. That game was a crazy one. Wichita State got out to a big lead. And you're thinking, oh my gosh, you've got to be kidding me. Like, this sucks. Like, they're down in Wichita at Interest Bank Arena. You know, it's the crowd's great. You know, it's packed, 50-50 split. But Wichita State fans are just rocking. K-State must have Nigel Pack, and you're thinking, oh my gosh. Like, he's got a concussion. He got a concussion in practice like the day before. And so you're thinking, great. K-State goes on a run, right? They get that game. They make a run. It's like, it's about tied at halftime. You're thinking, okay. Come in the second half, same thing. Wichita State goes on a big old run. How often did we see K-State do this, by the way, this last year? led a team go on a big run at the beginning of the half. Wichita State was on a bit of grind. You're just like, oh my gosh, this is so annoying. But then K-State just caught fire, man. Remember that Marquise Noel? He got going, he got clicking. And K-State just flexed on Wichita State and really won a dramatic game against them. And it was the one game of the year, Eddie, where I think that I was legit, like, up, standing, screaming in front of my TV because it was Wichita State, man. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was Wichita State because we beat them because of all of that bubbled up crap that we've been listening to for 10 to 15 years. Just made that so satisfying to be able to beat them and to shut them up, man. Like, to shut them up for at least a year. For at least a year to be able to shut them up and to get that W. So that was a really cool one for me. And I will say this. I don't know what Jerome Tang's going to do with the schedule. But that K-State-Wichita State game, that's got to stay on the schedule for a yearly game, man. Like, it does. I'm sorry. The atmosphere is great. When you got that arena split 50-50, I don't care where you play. I know they got three more on the schedule still, but, you know, that's a game you got to keep. Like, that game means something. You can tell. And those are the games fans care about. Like, those are the games fans care about. And the non-con, you need to give fans those games that they care about, man. So, it was a home run. It was a home run first game for that series. And I think it was just validation that was the right thing to do. To get those two teams in the basketball court, and it should stay a yearly thing. So, so we'll see if it lives up to the billing. And I think it's in Kansas City. It's next year, or maybe it's in Manhattan. I don't know. It's one of the.
I think it's KC. I think it's KC next year.
Is it KC next year? So we'll see if it lives up to the billing in Kansas City. I think there'll be more K-State fans at that one. But either way, that was a great game. It was great they got that series done. And just from all the stuff we'd listened to and the way that game came down to the wire, not having Nigel Pack, it was a great one. So, number one for me.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
That was Alex Aiden, Eddie Greer, the Purple Project Podcast, weekly edition, episode 97. Continues there, Alex there, getting us in his favorite moments, or favorite moment, I should say, from the men's and women's basketball season from 2021 to 22 this past year there. Yeah, Wichita, I'm glad that the schools decided, hey, let's finally meet up, quit talking, let's put this on the court. So this is actually, we talked about this in the past episodes on this podcast. When they first started it, we were both excited about it. And I believe it started year one of four, possibly, because it is. That game was on, neutral court, I want to say. Felt like it was more in Wichita State, but anyway, I think next year is KC, and then you got a home and home. I think that's how it was set up to be, if I remember that correctly there. It'll be interesting.
I think you're right.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think a lot of K-State purples will show up there next year. Obviously, Jerome Tang and the hype around here in Manhattan right now.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to get this basketball team right. So, It's gonna be something next year for sure, obviously. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. And man, Alex, you're on a KU rant tonight on this podcast.
Well, you know, look, every morning it feels like I wake up, I roll 2 inches in bed to go grab my phone, right, to scroll through Twitter before I get up, and I open Twitter up and I see like the latest thing that KU said about K-State, and I'm just like, why are you talking about us, like. Our basketball team consists of like four players right now. Like, are you proud of that? Like, I don't understand. I don't get it. Like, is it just because, oh, you won the national championship and we fired our coach? Like, you feel like you can just flex on? I don't know. Hey, I'm not going to hate on him, Eddie, because look, if K-State won the national championship and we win in Allen Fieldhouse and we were down 18 and came back and won, oh, you better believe I'll be coming on this podcast every week flexing on KU. I flex on KU whenever I can flex on him. So, Hey, I'm not saying I wouldn't be doing it too. I'm just saying I don't exactly understand it coming for a school that tries to act like they don't care about K-State because they sure sound like they do. But yes, my KU hatred is pretty. I'm pretty open about it. I'm pretty open-heady about my hatred for the Jayhawks. So yeah, I'll get digs in whenever I can, man.
Give me some digs.
Give me on a rant. I'll go.
Yeah, you're definitely getting them in on this one here tonight, episode 97 of this podcast. So definitely pretty funny to hear as usual and enjoyable as usual.
I can keep going, I can go all day. We don't even start with the facility.
No.
I mean, they're baseball. I mean, I think they've had something fall off with every facility they have this year. They got 40 parties at the football stadium. They got scoreboards falling down at the basketball stadium. Their baseball stadium had like a roof rip off or something. They have like tarpet or something. I don't know what the hell happened. And so I was like, look, why don't you actually, like, try to get a facility? Like, that works. Like, I don't know. It's just a crazy thought. Like, K-State's got all these great facilities. I won't go into that rant, though. You can proceed with the show.
Yeah, now back to regular schedule programming. All right. So, before we get deeper in the rabbit hole here, folks, NFL draft to kind of end this podcast with that. All right. So, we have K-State. Well, they have four potential guys that could get drafted in the NFL draft. Of course, the NFL draft starts tomorrow. And when this episode comes out, it will be the second round of the NFL draft from Las Vegas, Nevada. Of course, round one begins tomorrow. Obviously, we talked about it quite a bit before we hit the record button here. Just to kind of review here, K-State's player up for draft. Which includes Josh Rivas, Rush Yeast, Reggie Stubblefield, we have on his podcast, a.k.a. Sauce Boss. Again, that episode with him is out now, wherever you listen to podcasts. If you're looking for something to get hyped about the NFL draft, definitely that is a must-listen here on the Pro Project Podcast. Got to throw that in there. And, of course, Skylar Thompson also, who has been on a Michigan mission really since the bowl game. Against LSU, and that's really curious momentum, trying to get drafted or trying to get signed to get a free agent. So, with that, I'm going to open it up right here real fast here. So, out of all four of those players, and I might be missing a couple, but out of those main four guys, who has the potential, Alex, most potential to get drafted? So Rush Yeast and Reggie Stillfield come out of the DB backfield for K-State defensive backfield. So I'm going to save that for the second half. Okay, so between Josh Rivas and Skylar Thompson, Alex, who has a chance to get drafted? Skylar or Josh Rivas?
That is a great question. Eddie, I think that's a great question that a lot of people are curious about. When you look at them, KU's got history. They've got history of some DBs that go and have some nice NFL careers, especially late. AJ Parker, who went undrafted, made the team this last year in Detroit. Yep. And ended up having a nice season for him. You've got DJ Reed, who has played nice. He's been a nice player in the NFL. Who was in that K-State backfield?
Yeah.
K-State secondary. And then also when you look around, there's some other guys who have made some stints as well in the NFL. And had their moments. So, I mean, you know, K-State has had that. So when you look at Russ East, when you look at Reggie Stubblefield, I think that there could be some potential. When I look at those two, I see them more. I think they'll be UDFAs. I think they'll be undrafted free agents. They get signed, but maybe not. Maybe one of them slides into, the back end. Of the draft. Wouldn't surprise me if you see a team go ahead and take, kind of a flyer on one of those, one of them and see if they can play it. Look, you mentioned it. We had Reggie on the show. I'd give Reggie a shot. I mean, are you kidding? I mean,
I was leaning towards that a little bit.
He's got the. When you're looking for a player, like a player that's got, you know, has got that mentality, has got the mindset that you want out of somebody in your secondary. I mean, he's got it. You know, he's got it. Yeah, he's undersized. But look, AJ Barker was undersized, and we know the things he did at K-State, and he's doing them in Detroit. So
Duke Shelley.
Exactly. And so I think that's a gamble that I would be, willing to take a risk on, especially when you get in those later rounds when, you don't know. It is a little more of a gamble. It is a little bit more of like Russian roulette, or you're playing, playing the odds or something like that, blackjack, blackjack in Vegas. I still think that there'll be UDFAs that end up getting signed, the secondary guys. Once again, could be wrong. I think Tyler Thompson and Josh Rivas would be the more realistic options to get drafted. What's crazy about them is I've seen such wide ranges on where they could go. And Skylar in particular. I've seen people say as early as the third round for Skylar, and I've seen as late as an undrafted free agent. Then Josh Rivas, offensive lineman, man, you never can get too many. You never can find enough offensive linemen. You just can't. Josh Rivas, he's a solid lineman. He's got some versatility. K-State had to get. I mean, remember a couple years ago during the COVID season, they had to get versatile, move some bodies around as well.
The way things
broke there. NFL teams like to like to get development. Development alignment in the later rounds. You know, that's something that is, once again, I think it's a good investment for an NFL team to say, hey, let's get a player that is at a premium position. Josh Reeves, has the ability to play tackle positions and, see what we can do with them. Like I said, if they hit, then, we got a player that can be a premium position, a player that can maybe jump around on the line, they can maybe do some tackle stuff, maybe they can be a swing tackle. A lot of different things that you could do there. So once again, it just seems like you see a lot of linemen go in those later rounds, the developmental linemen, because it's just a good bargain pick. So I definitely could see that happening with him. And I know that he feels good too. He was quoted in an article, I think it was in the Topeka, I think it might have been the Topeka Capital Journal, but he seemed optimistic, on what could happen for him, and kind of where he could go. I actually have a quote here. Said, I feel good. I feel like I got a great opportunity, even if it's free agency, to make a team. I 100% agree with that. Whether he gets drafted or not, once again, go bargain. You get off slime like that, you get on the building, you got to get a chance to make a team. And I think the biggest thing, Eddie, is all four of these guys you just mentioned, I think they end up on NFL rosters going into training camp. And that's really the biggest thing. More than will they get drafted, will they not get drafted. Obviously, you hope someone gets drafted because you like to see players drafted from your schools. But I think that all of them will have the opportunity to make an NFL roster. And that's really what we all really care about. We want to see these K-Staters succeed at the next level and have opportunities. And, sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. But K-State does have a good track record of, even if they don't have players getting drafted, they got a good track record of having a lot of players land as UDFAs. And it's sticking. We've seen it in a lot of different spots. We've seen it with a lot of different teams. And you don't have to look much further than K-State's former wide receiver. Well, not K-State. The Chiefs' former wide receiver, who was an undrafted free agent, who played down the road in Kansas City for a few years and became really the third option there this last year. And then he got paid. He got paid to go play in Chicago this year. So K-State's got the history of doing that and really excelling there. So I think all four of you picked up. I think all four have an opportunity to play for a roster spot on their team, and you know, or be on the practice squad. And it'll be interesting to see the way it plays out. But if I was a betting man, Eddie, because it is in Vegas, so I'm a betting man, which I'm not. Although I'm always intrigued, Eddie, by the betting lines, and I have bet before, but I'm so bad at it. It's just like why throw money away? So. Yeah, I don't usually throw it away. I got a break even sometimes. Anyway, I don't bet a lot. When I say a lot, I bet years. So, anyway, if I was a betting man, I would bet on Skylar Thompson because I think that he has had a really good offseason, really NFL process. Whatever you want to call that process that the players go through when the college football season ends to the NFL draft, I think he's had a really good process. He did really good in Vegas, at the was it the Senior Bowl that was in Vegas, or was it the other? Was it the Shrine Bowl? I can't remember which one was in Vegas.
It was Senior Bowl.
Mobile. Yeah, I can't remember whichever one it was. He performed really well there. Had a couple touchdown passes, and or maybe it was a touchdown pass, a 2-point conversion. But either way, he performed well there. He went to the combine. He got the invite. Did good work at the combine. You know, K-State obviously had the had a pro day where some players were able to show out there too. And Scott Thompson's just done really, really good work through this entire process. And as you mentioned, Eddie, it seems like he's carried the momentum from the end of the season, that LSU game where he was just so dominant in that LSU game. He just carried it. Just carried it into that NFL draft process. And so I think he's put himself in a position where a team may be looking for a developmental quarterback, or they're looking for something like that, and Skylar Thompson would be perfect. He could be perfect for that type of role. Do I see Skylar Thompson as an NFL starter? No. Do I think he could be an NFL backup? Yes, I do. I think he has that ability, and so you know, just thinking, just thinking even like the way the Chiefs think. The Chiefs always like to bring a developmental guy in every year. You know, that's something they're always. Yes, they have Patrick Mahomes, but they always like to have a young developmental guy in there and see if it sticks, see if he can grow and develop and learn, and maybe they'll get their backup behind Patrick Mahomes in the future. That's something they're always interested in. And so they're always looking for QBs, typically. Like, I think it's the same way with other teams. I mean, other teams are the exact same way. You know, hey, you know, get it on the old guy. You know, worst case scenario, we can stash him on the practice squad. You can get some snaps against first team defense. And with the new NFL rules, you can call him up if you need him. So, I think that there's some flexibility. I think that Skylar has those options. And look, it's not a very deep quarterback draft class either. I think that's the other thing Skylar has working for him. I think I heard somebody, Eddie, say this might be the second worst quarterback draft in the last 20 years. it's not very good. Like, it's not very deep. So, and you know what, Eddie, that could be a blessing or a curse for Skylar. It really depends when the run on QBs goes. Like, if your Falcons decide we're going QB at 8, and the Panthers say, you know, we're going QB at 6, and, like, that happens, and, like, a run on QBs happens early, and everybody starts, like, jumping up trying to get QBs and just push all these quarterbacks up, then maybe that could work for Skylar Thompson potentially. Drive, just because, once again, you're just getting QBs off the board earlier. And the flip side, if everybody waits till second, third round to go get those guys, and who knows, maybe that pushes the QB, kind of that QB demand back. So that could go one way or the other. But it's not a strong QB class. I think that would work in Skylar's favor, the way that he's performed. So we'll see. But either way, I'm eager to see what happens.
Yeah, definitely I agree with a lot you said there. Yeah, but I don't think... initially, I don't think a run of quarterbacks would happen in this first round. Now, if that does happen, I'll eat my words. But I don't think that's going to happen with the weak quarterback class that we got going on. So, even though my team is looking for the next quarterback of the future of this franchise, me talking about the Falcons, Atlanta Falcons, this is not a very good quarterback class. So it's going to be interesting to see that where, Skylar's carrying a lot of momentum. So we'll see what happens there. Yeah, I agree. I think Josh Reeves and Skylar Thompson, even though I really want to say he's going to get drafted, yeah, I think it's going to be a UFA for sure there. I give the pairing of Rush East and Reggie Stonefield a better chance than those two guys. So, yeah, if they do, I think they're going to go late. I think they'll go 6th or 7th round somewhere in there.
And you very well could be right. I definitely think there's a possibility that both Reggie and Russ could go in the later rounds. Definitely. I definitely think that's possible. It's tough in the late rounds, Eddie, because you just, teams' boards are so different that scouts don't know, NFL, draft experts don't really know. And so it's hard to get a feel for, like, what teams are really thinking in those later rounds, like it is earlier rounds. And when you look, some players you just know. But with Russ East and Reggie Stubblefield, I really feel like I just don't know where they are on teams' boards. I don't know how teams would value those two guys. But if they value them the way that, like, you and I value them, the way that people who watch them every week value them, yeah, I absolutely believe that they could be late round picks. So I definitely think that you could be right there. I think there could be a chance all four were taken. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if all four were taken. I wouldn't be surprised if none were taken. You know, I think that it's really kind of as wide open as I can remember it in years about whether or not we know. It feels like we usually know, at least have kind of an idea on where K-State players could go. This year, it just feels wide open.
Yeah, definitely wide open. So we'll see what happens there with our fellow K-Staters. Four of them, I think that's it. I might be mistaken, but that's the four most important ones that we're talking about. So definitely we'll see. We'll try to keep track with those guys throughout the weekend between Skylar Thompson, Josh Reeves, Sauce Boss, and Russ Yeast.
Don't get Sauce Boss, by the way, confused with Sauce Gardner.
Oh, no, yeah, like, don't do that.
Sauce, like, oh my gosh, he was taken 7th overall? It's like, no, different sauce.
Yeah, that's
different sauce. There's a couple sauces in this year's draft.
Yeah, Cincinnati, that is Cincinnati's Sauce Gardner. The Falcons are also linked to him as well. So, I mean, you said it, we're the definite wild card in this. We could trade back, get a D tackle. We can definitely stay at 8, which I think that's going to happen. And we're going to have to see how this thing falls with the 7 teams before us do. So it's a big draft year for sure. We got to get some impact players. There's no question about that.
Eddie, do the Falcons consider receiver? Do they feel like they need to replace Hulu and pair someone with Michael Pitts or no?
They do, but not in the first round. Two picks in the second round. I think another one in the third. I think there was a stat thrown up there in a few podcasts pertaining to the Falcons. We have, five of the 6 first 100 picks in the draft. Some crazy stat like that, which is a good thing for the Falcons. So we need impact talent. So I think a wide receiver makes sense in the second round, not the first round. I would be furious if we pick a wide receiver.
I think there would be better value on the board for the Falcons at other positions than wide receiver. Because wide receiver is deep. It's really deep this year. You can get a good guy in the second round that can have a day one impact on your team. And if you're looking at some other positions, there's some more steep drop-offs after round one. So I see we're going with that. But I've heard a lot of people, look, everyone always talks about wide receivers. And to me, it feels like there's not like a top shelf guy. There's not like Jamar Chase, right, in this draft.
Yeah, it's not that number one guy. There's not that number one guy.
Dude, we need him. There's no like Jalen Waddle where you're like, oh, we want him. Like Jameson Wilson's got potential to be a stud, to be a dude. Garrett Wilson does too, but you know, and I think Chris Olave could be like an Emmanuel Sanders type player, but I just, so I see a lot of like really, really good receivers, but I just don't know if I see like that guy. But I've heard just a lot of people talking about they got to pair someone, you know, they you know, with no Ridley, you know, for this year with Julio Jones gone, you know, and now you got Kyle Pitts and, you know, Mariota, they got to get a weapon on offense. But I'm assuming for the Falcons, it just makes most sense to go with the best value because you kind of need handful spots, right, to fill out.
Yeah, we have a hand, I wouldn't say handful, but a lot of spots in that roster, obviously. But they've done a good job. At least I'll give them that, free agent guys to 1-2 year deals. They're there to kind of start to fill out that roster out. So this is going to be big. It's going to be big for us to come out of here, at least the first two rounds, getting some impact guys, whether that's, of course, talking to you before I hit the record button tonight, staying at 8, and maybe sticking back in the first round and getting our guy QB late in the round, or play the unknown card, trade back, still get a guy that can impact your defense or offense, whatever you decide to do. So we'll find out for sure. Falcons Twitter is going to be on point for sure.
And one other question, Eddie, because I was listening to another mock draft that was being done by KC Sports Network. It was an entire first round actually earlier today. And they were talking about the Falcons, and they were talking about the quarterback situation. And as you mentioned, do they trade? Do they take 1 and 8? Do they go trade back in late in the first round? Or do the Falcons say, we wait next year to get our guy? Like, do you think that there's a possibility that the Falcons may just be saying, you know what, we want to go get our guy next year? I mean, because I've heard that discussion too, where people are like, you know, they're just waiting for next year. Like, they're just waiting for next year. But how many years have we heard that about the Falcons saying, oh, well, they're just waiting for the next year? I feel like I've heard that for like at least 3 or 4 years about them in the quarterback.
Yeah, because I keep saying on the podcast, that's why you hear it.
Like, I hear it every year. Oh, they're waiting till the next year.
We should have got one last year when we had Justin Fields, and we pretty much wasted Matt Ryan's time here in Atlanta. Way that all shook out, I'm not going to go down the rabbit hole tonight because we're running out of time. But that's a whole nother podcast. I ain't going all that. But, yeah, so we had an opportunity to pick a quarterback last year's draft where it was pretty damn good draft of quarterbacks.
It was, yeah.
And I thought that was a missed opportunity. Missed opportunity by this new regime to get one. Instead, all that happened there. And, of course, the fallout this past summer, and they're trying to make up for it, for trying to get a quarterback. So, yeah, that's been some talk about it, too. You're right. There's been Falcon podcasts I listen to on a daily basis that have been talking about that. So, it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, the talk around the water cooler right now is either... If it all depends on who's there at 8. That's whether
which we
it's,
don't know. I mean, this is really.
I don't know.
Really
like I said. Yeah, like I said, I don't know what's gonna happen. It all depends on who's there, and Terry Fontenot, the general manager for the Atlanta Falcons, he has this mentality coming from New Orleans Saints, draft best player available, right?
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
that's not gonna be a QB.
It cannot be a QB.
If you're the best player available, the best player at number 8 is not going to be a QB.
We need impact players. We cannot have this mentality. And that's been a talk too. I mean, it's huge. This is huge for Terry Fontenot. You gotta hit on these picks. Arthur Smith, of course, if you guys don't know. This has turned into the Falcons podcast now. Arthur Smith is the head coach for the Falcons going into his second season this fall. So they got to hit these picks, man. They got to hit the picks. And, yeah, that's all I have to say for that. So, yeah, I can't even tell you who we're going to pick But it's going to be must-see TV, for sure. I do know that. So
I literally can't tell you at all who the Chiefs are going to pick, because they pick at 29 and 30. So who the hell knows who's on the, who's on the board then? Although, I'll say this. I said at the beginning of the podcast, I think the Chiefs, there's not a lot of talk, by the way, about trades. There's just not a lot of trades that make sense for the Chiefs in the draft, in the first round. Because, yeah, I think they're going to want to trade up Eddie, and then I think that they're going to, with one of those first round picks, then I think they're going to want to trade back with another one to, like, get some picks back. But I don't know if they're going to be able to do that, because I think that they may have, I think trading back is going to be more difficult. I don't think that they can, like, stay in the 30s if they trade back. And then I'm like, I don't know if it's worth it. And then, like, trading up, like, is it worth the capital to go trade up to, like, I don't know, 13 with the Texans to possibly go get, like, the fourth edge? Maybe. That might be worth it. But, like, maybe, I don't know. It depends what the offer is. Is it worth, like, going up to 15 or 17 to get Jameson Williams if he's still on the board? Maybe. Possibly. But I don't know. And it's like, again, there's only, like, a few players that I would be willing to trade up for if I were the Chiefs. And I just don't know if they're going to be available. And at that point, it's like, well, you may as well sit, you know, sit and wait. And then it's like, well, okay, we feel there's better value in the second round, so let's go just trade back. I think that they wouldn't be able to trade back to the 40s, and it's like, well, okay, so now we're stuck here kind of like in this middle ground, like this 29 to 30 middle ground. So I feel like it's wide open for them. And what's crazy about them, Eddie, is they got scouts to move around, because they literally got 12 draft picks more than any team in the draft this year. They got 2 first-rounders, 2 second-rounders, 2 third-rounders, and 2 fourth-rounders. So you've clearly got ammo to move around. It's just, this draft isn't that top-heavy. It's deep, but it's not that top-heavy. There's not a Joe Burrow. There's not the Jamar Chase. There's not, heck, Eddie, I'll even say Kyle Pitts. There's not a Kyle Pitts out there at the top. There's not a guy, there's not, like, guys like that there. There just isn't. There's question marks with every guy. And it's just, there's no slam dunks, if that makes sense.
So
it's,
yeah.
Which is honestly why, Eddie, no one knows what's going to happen. Because there isn't that slam dunk guy, which just kind of opens the door for chaos. Which, hey, I'm here for chaos in an NFL draft. Buckle me up for that. Not buckle me up for that. That made no sense. Sign me up for that. That's what I meant to say. Buckle up and sign me up for that.
Yeah, so definitely stay tuned for the Pro Project Podcast daily this weekend. Of course, my favorite moment from the men's and women's basketball team, as well as if any of these KCers get drafted, we have immediate coverage as well, and possibly more going into next weekend. Just don't know.
And let's also hear Eddie's reaction to Malik Willis is taken 8th overall by the Falcons.
I'll be okay with that. Now that's one thing I can tell you. I'll be okay with that. Or Desmond Ridder as well. That's been a lot of chatter for the Falcons
He's been riding the board.
So I will actually be okay with either one of those. So
we'll be excited to hear Eddie's reaction to them drafting Kenny Pickett with their
first
pick.
No.
Oh my god. Eddie, like, going to rant. I'm trying to find the one on QB that Eddie's like,
don't draft Carson Strong. I don't wanna see him there.
You don't wanna see Eat Nevada. You don't want to see him. He was flinging at Manhattan earlier this year.
He did not impress me.
Honestly, K-State Stephen shut him down. They shut him down.
He did not impress me live. When I saw him live, when Nevada came in.
You were there. That's right. You were there.
Yep. I was there. Yep. Me and the wife were there in person. He did not look impressed, because obviously, yeah, K-State made him look bad, but yeah, he didn't impress me at all. So I did not want to see him.
We figured him out. We do. We know how to stop. We got him.
Yeah, I did not. Yeah, I don't want to see him in a Falcons uniform either. So take him out. Kenny Pickett, going back to him. Yeah, there's been some rumblings about him. But, I mean, the scouting for the Falcons have all the quarterbacks in their mind, but there's only two that stand out. So it'll be interesting to see wide receiver. If they try a wide receiver at 8, then I'm going to go on a rant about that. So, so they can wait.
You don't want to see Garrett Wilson go at number 8.
Yeah, there was an article somewhere about that, and he wasn't all the hype, so I don't want to see him there either. So we're just gonna list off the names. I'm gonna
watch. Interesting.
Hey
man, I'm with you. I got strong feelings about things Steve should do too, so I'm with you there. Everyone keeps talking to George Karloftis up, like, oh, he's great, great. I don't see it, man. Like, everyone, like, trade up for George Karloftis. Why? I wouldn't even take him to the 29. I don't understand. Well, I still end up taking him. I'll live with it if they do. But it's just, and then people talk about, like, the Christian Watson at 20. Why? Why would they take Christian Watson at 29? I don't know, man. I don't see it. It's like, his pace is, like, third or fourth round. Hey, like, he's got great athleticism, but that's just such a big question mark for the first round. Like, maybe they take him, and again, I'll get on board. Like, hey, I'm not going to be like, oh, forget the Chiefs. Oh, but I just doesn't make sense to me. I'm with you, Eddie. Like, I've got the love and hate as well for my team. But yeah, if Carson Strong is taking him the first pick by the Falcons, I'll probably tag you on Twitter. Probably what I'll do. Hey, 100% honest.
Yeah, so you definitely hear rants if that happens. But yeah, there's some negatives that you cannot control the board. So we're just going to have to see what happens. But either way, yeah, you're definitely going to get a reaction from me. Now, next week's concern, I am working. I have a list of special guests that I'm trying. I haven't reached out to them yet. I have not reached out to them yet, but I have 2 and 3 in mind I could bring on next week. So it could be a special guest on next week or not. So we'll see what happens then. But if not, we'll definitely have NFL draft reactions from the weekend and for sure. So that, and then of course, if anything comes up from recruiting, from basketball, we'll have that as well. Speaking of other sports here, real quick, before we close things down on this edition of the Pro Project Podcast Weekly Edition, track is in for me in action this weekend. I had to schedule it for a moment, and I switched it from the NFL draft to K-State. There we go. So now, okay, so tomorrow, which is Thursday, track and field will be at Drake Relays competing there. That's going to be a 2-day meet, it looks like, for them Thursday and Friday. So that's going to be exciting for those guys down there. And then, of course, they're right back at it. It's going to be a busy week for the track and field team, of course. On Friday, it's going to be a split squad. Half the team is going to be at Drake Relays. And then, of course, Kip Janvin Open. The track and field team on Friday afternoon around lunch hour. So they got that going on, and of course that continues. Boy, track and field is all over it. And then later on, half hour later, it's the Corky Crowfoot Shootout. Yes, let me repeat that. Corky Cool Crowfoot Shootout.
That's quite the name.
That is quite, yeah, that is some name. Who came up with that name?
Some name, indeed.
Who came up with that name? I have no idea. All I know is that Texas Tech. So, figure that one out. And of course...
Well, hey man. it's Texas. And look, man, Texas is... No offense to Texas, but that's a surprise thing. That weird name coming from Texas. Okay, the only weirder thing is if it would come from Florida. That would be, like, the only... Only thing that would make it weird.
Continue, we'll go on, though. We already touched on baseball. They're going to Oklahoma, and by the way, those track and field teams, they're going to be doing a lot of traveling through the next couple of days, so it'll be interesting to follow them this weekend as well. They get prepared for the Big 12 championships later on as well. Men's golf did finish their Big 12 championships. The Cats golf, men's golf team, same like the women's team, they finished 9th in the Big 12 championships there. After a promising spring season, kind of disappointing to be honest there, to finish 9th out of 10 teams there. in that tournament there. But they got it in. That's the problem. That is the good thing right there. And that is a young golf men's golf team that they have there. So they got a couple of bright spots on that team. So I'm looking forward to see what they do in the future. But we're closing on the end of this Pro Project Podcast. Episode 97, folks. Alex, you have last words?
Yeah, you know, Eddie, I just want to be great to be able to catch up again. Glad you had a good time in Oklahoma City and on your run.
Hey, you said it again.
Yeah, I'm glad you had a good time on your run out there in Oklahoma City. No, I'm glad you had a great time on your marathon. By a tornado. I am, like I said, I survived Vegas. Took me a couple days since I got home to get my legs back under me fully, but they have arrived. So we're back to the grind, and you know, like I said, we're kind of in a little bit of a slower period for K-State sports, but big stretch for the baseball team. So, you know, I'm eager to see what they do. I'm also eager to see this basketball team and kind of the way this roster fills out. We didn't get into it tonight, but they've landed a guard there from Mississippi State and a forward from LSU. Two players that still have 3 years of eligibility, I think, could be really good players for K-State, and they're going after, as you and I were talking about, arguably the best transfer in the portal, 22nd all time in scoring in NCAA, and he'd be a fifth-year grad transfer, and he averaged 24 points a game last year, so not too shabby. That would be obviously a phenomenal gift for K-State if they could land him, and they're also, you know, having a couple high four-star and another potential five-star visit too. So Jerome Tang and company are definitely bringing in more talent at the moment than Bruce Weber ever did in Manhattan. So the recruiting is so far living up to the hype. We'll see if that continues. And obviously, like I said, in the coming weeks, we'll follow that and follow kind of the this basketball team as it's built, and we get a better idea of what they'll look like next year. And the football team, Eddie, the football teams have been really busy on the recruit trail too. We talked about it in the Kansas. Now they've got possibly closing in on the maybe being able to get a commitment from the QB there, Avery, and possibly a month or two, and then, you know, who knows what'll happen with Dylan Edwards. I still think he'll go to OU, but we'll see. So some recruiting stuff coming down the pipe for us to talk about as well. So I'm eager for it. And I'm also eager for episode 100. We're creeping up on it. It is right around the corner. So
yeah, stuff yeah, definitely creeping up on us. It's going to be here before we all know it, folks. And on that note, the Purple Project Podcast, episode 97 in the books once again. April coming to a close, and this episode coming to a close as well. And we'll be keeping track of the track and field and baseball teams this weekend, because obviously that's what's going on right now outside of recruiting for men's basketball and, of course, recruiting on the football side as well here in this period of sports for K-State. For Alex Aiden, out there in San Diego, California, Eddie Greer, another edition of the Weeklies in the Books. Enjoy the NFL draft. We don't know what's going to happen, but we're going to be here to talk about it next week here, unless we get a special guest back on here for episode 98. Of course, the Pro Project Podcast. Find it wherever you get your podcast, sir. Alex, we will do this again next week.
I look forward to it, Eddie. We'll be right back.
Purple Project Podcast. Get it wherever podcasts are found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Audio Boom, and more. We'll talk to you on the next edition of the Purple Project Podcast.